Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So why did they lie to us about it for so long? A shocking new piece in, of all places, the celebrity suck-up magazine Vanity Fair answers that question in great detail. You should read it. In short, many research scientists are addicted to American tax dollars. If the American public understood just how recklessly they have behaved, endangering the entire world with their weird little experiments in poorly regulated labs in China, that money might dry up. As a former NSC official called Jamie Metzl put it succinctly, quote, if the pandemic started as part of a lab leak, it had the potential to do to virology what Three Mile Island and Chernobyl did to nuclear science. Can't have that. Got to keep the money flowing. So they lied about it. And then they intimidated anyone who tried to tell the truth.
Yep. And we're going to continue to see what the truth is as we roll through the post-mortem, so to speak, on the coronavirus pandemic. Let's talk to a guy who might know a few things about that. The good doctor himself, Randy Tolber. You can hear him every Saturday morning here, the Dr. Randy Tolber Show. Here at 97.1 FM Talk from 6 to 7 a.m. Doc, how you doing this afternoon? I understand that you're calling us from beautiful southwest Missouri this afternoon.
Yeah, it's really gratifying to see that things are opening up. We're down in Branson where we're hanging out with the kids and a couple of our grandkids. And it's good. We were down at Silver Dollar City, and I tweeted earlier today that I'm really glad to see that despite the percentage of Missourians that's vaccinated, you know, that are south of 50%, it appears as though all the attendees at Silver Dollar City and everywhere else in Branson have been fully vaccinated. There was a sign that said, if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. And I couldn't find anyone wearing a mask except the employees there, Tim. So it's really gratifying. People are just vaccinated all over the place. It's great to see.
Yeah, Randy, people taking a little advantage of the honor system, right? But I think it's because, Randy, people are now wondering with these with the Fauci emails is what have we been told over the last 18 months? Has any of it been true? And what are we supposed to do now? So people are kind of like, well, I'm just going to move on with my life. And, yeah, we want them to get vaccinated. We want them to be careful. But at this point, Randy, people aren't dying in the streets.
No, and it's really sad because I think that Fauci's handling of this, becoming a political celebrity, I think got him into trouble in terms of losing his scientific curiosity, which is really the basis of all great, credible scientific inquiry. And I think the guy has some scientific credibility. After all, he was really pivotal in the whole fight against HIV back in the 80s. You know, it was huge, and his work was very, very credible and valued. But somehow, when you mix politics and science, you often get what's happened here, and it's led to a lot of discrediting of the whole vaccine story. And because institutions become discredited with activities like this, where he was just so blindly allegiant to the research going on there, as academic scientists will sometimes get, they go down the rabbit hole. This gain of function and related type research is really a fundamental tenet of modern virology. And you get so married to that that you become, I think, vulnerable to becoming blind to curiosity. And, you know, had he paid a little more attention last year and previously to what Donald Trump had said and what others knew about the national security threat that the Chinese Communist Party poses in other realms, whether it's cybersecurity or the South China Sea or whatever else, we know that they can't tell the truth. We know that their aim is to dominate the world. And for him to blindly think that he could just trust those scientists with the NIH money to do what he thought they were going to do, and then to, you know, just sort of overlook the fact that preeminent virologists were saying, hey, there are some elements in the RNA structure of this virus that indicate this may not have been just the natural evolution within animals that then jumped to bats or jumped to humans. And that's what's troubling, you know. And so what's the final result of it? It's another dent in what was formerly a very credible institution, the National Institutes of Health, and particularly the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. So you can see how people who were maybe vaccine skeptics before are saying, well, wait a minute, if we can't even believe that this thing, you know, if we can't even believe what they're saying about where it may have emanated from, can we believe anything about it? So, you know, it's creating a lot of confusion, and that's a shame.
And Randy, doesn't the national far left leaning media have a lot of share in this blame, don't they? Because they purposefully ran with all the stories that I guess promoted their narrative, and they purposefully either ignored or tried to criticize unfairly stories that they didn't like, mainly anything that Donald Trump or any Republican said, like Senator Tom Cotton. Randy, Senator Tom Cotton was talking about Wuhan lab leaks as a potential thing we should at least look at and question. He wasn't saying it happened for sure. He didn't know, but he said, I've got all the circumstantial evidence. I'm on the Senate Intelligence Committee. I'm putting one and one and one and one together, and I'm coming up with a very troubled equation here. But they called him a racist and a xenophobe and this, that, and the other thing. And now, 18 months later, he's been vindicated. But after we've been through a lot of turmoil, so Randy, I guess, you know, the media bears a lot of blame in this, don't they, and this lack of intellectual curiosity about this subject.
Well, no, you're right. And let's look at the history. I mean, there were other times where the Wuhan lab has been found, even though they're a level 4 biosecurity lab, there were times when there were breaches at a level 2, you know, previously in their history. And so given that, and given the Chinese Communist Party, their strategy in terms of domination and defeating the United States, you know, this is like a bad math equation that the journalists have come up with. One, anything that Donald Trump says is wrong, plus one, anything that the Communist China's party says must be trusted because, after all, we're globalists, us journalists, and they get three. Well, that's why they got the wrong number. They made the wrong call. Now, I think it's fair to say, too, that we haven't proven, and I don't know whether we'll ever be able to prove, although there's an ongoing investigation. I don't know whether it is tepid or not, since the Biden administration says that within 90 days there's a commission that should report on that. But we don't really know if it's going to turn into proof that it originated in the lab. Certainly the circumstantial evidence and all the political circumstances around this whole event would indicate that that's very, very likely, especially when it's being reported by the Wall Street Journal previously now that, three Chinese scientists in November had symptoms compatible with COVID-19, and the Chinese covered that up. So if it really came from the wet market near Wuhan, why didn't they say so? I mean, what do they need to hide anything for? So I think when you have people so secretive about something, we know in our own lives, when people are carrying secrets and they don't want to be transparent, the natural thing that usually is going on, and if something that we need to question, is what are they covering up? And I think that the fullness of time, I hope, will illustrate that, in fact, Rand Paul and, yes, Donald Trump were absolutely right.
Randy, would you comment a bit on gain-of-function research? Is this something—I know Senator Rand Paul talked about this quite a bit last week, and he seemed to be very troubled by it. I know it's great, Randy, for us to have such innovators in science and technology and always be looking for advancements, because sometimes when we study these issues, we gain great advances in some. Is there anything, Randy, to be gained from gain-of-function, or is this an area where we shouldn't be playing God and we shouldn't be messing with this stuff?
Well, I think there's two sides to that argument. I think at a minimum, if there's credibility to the argument that, look, there are bad actors in the world, whether it's Iran or whether it's China or whether it's Russia, or, you know, name your bad actor that's after America. Okay, they are probably aspiring to, if not involved, in bioterrorism research, right? Whether it is, you know, whether it's a bacteria that they're trying a way to package and put in a warhead or to some other way get into, you know, through nefarious means into a big public, exposure. But it could be a virus as well. And viruses, because these viruses can be transmitted so readily, as we've learned with COVID and similar viruses like influenza, respiratory viruses, they're really a perfect opportunity for bioterrorism. So if you make the posture that, hey, there are people doing research on this and they are genetically engineering, it would probably be prudent to stay up with the technology that is enabling to do that and the outcomes so that we can anticipate that. But at the very minimum, if you're going to embark in this kind of research, this should be in a level 7 security lab in, you know, some vault deep in, you know, the Los Alamos nuclear lab potential, you know, I mean, equivalent, or in Canada or in the UK, you know, MI5 or something. You don't send money to the Chinese, for crying out loud, if you're going to do it. So while I understand the rationale behind it, and I'm not fundamentally and absolutely opposed to it, I understand it. It may be good to stay ahead of that. We do that in hard military hardware as well, right? I mean, if we know that they're developing missiles or lasers or space technology, okay, we want to stay ahead of them. I get that. But this is risky business. It's highly, highly sensitive and the kind of business that if it gets out of control, as I think we'll find out eventually, at least there's a high probability of that, you see what can happen. And you just don't trust the Chinese Communist Party, for crying out loud.
Yeah, no kidding. Randy, a last topic I wanted to ask you about here, and we're talking to Randy Tolber, host of the Randy Tolber Show here every Saturday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. on 97.1 FM. Talk at Randy Tolber, MD. You can find a lot of Randy's prognostications on that place as well. Doc, Joe Biden's honeymoon after 5 months or so appears to be about over, and the calling card's not been taken away necessarily by the Republicans. The Republicans don't control much of the levers of power in Washington, D.C. It's his own party that are saying, Joe, not all of us Democrats have been taken over by the far left-wing radical socialist squad. I mean, you've got Joe Manchin, you've got Kristen Sinema, you've got others, you've got a whole group of Democrats in the House who are saying, we're not interested in moving forward on this $6 trillion spending plan. We don't see the purpose behind it. So Joe Biden, he's not having problems. He's having a hard time making the Republicans his enemies when he's got plenty of them, apparently, in his own camp. There may be some sanity left, Randy, right, in the DNC.
Well, I think so. And I'm hearing more and more, not that people are overtly admitting it, but if you just ask people that you know aren't, you know, your hardcore red meat eating conservative patriots that you know who those people are in your life. But you ask most anyone else, maybe people that have told you before they voted for Clinton, but they also voted for George Bush, and then they voted for Obama, but they voted for Trump. You know, I mean, there's people in the middle to the left and to the right who may have voted for Biden. For one reason or another, they didn't like Donald Trump's, hairdo. They didn't like some of his mannerisms, or maybe they didn't like his policies. But when I ask people the generic questions like, hey, so what do you think about, you know, all of these entitlements that are being developed? What about all this free money raining down from heaven? You know, there you can tell, Tim, there is a lot of buyer's remorse. And if you don't think that Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and probably more than that, other people in the Senate and, yes, even the House, are nervous because of what their focus groups are telling them. And I know, and you know, they're doing those focus groups and they have to face re-election here sooner or later. Mm-hmm. You know that they are nervous because there's a ton of buyer's remorse out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Randy, before I let you go, how is Branson? How is Southwest Missouri these days? Are people out and about and the vacationers are back?
Yeah, it really is. It's really opening up, and it looks like we've come down here for years with the kids, and it's a great wholesome place. And I'll tell you, you know what's really heartwarming, Tim? I was having a discussion with my son, who I think my son is more socially liberal than me, but economically more conservative, uh-huh, like I am, uh-huh, like a lot of our children, our adult children. And so I was having, let's say, a robust discussion standing in line in one of the roller coasters. And you'll be proud to know I did match my son with all the roller coaster rides today. I did good. without having to go to the dock afterwards. But it was funny. There was a couple that overheard us, and they started they were chuckling because they're from Texas. They said, well, we're from Texas, and you know how we feel. And then pretty soon, everyone, there were people with Don't Tread on Me T-shirts, and everybody
giving
my son the rant.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. So it's a good time, and it's a patriotic community, as you know, and a lot of great Americans down here. So it feels good to see people opening up and happy and having a great time again.
Very good. Well, enjoy Southwest Missouri. Enjoy Branson. Don't eat too many corn dogs, Doc, so be careful.
Nor funnel cakes.
That's
I'll be
right.
Bloated till Christmas.
That's right. Randy, right. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
You too, as well. There he goes, Dr. Randy Tolber, at Randy Tolber, MD. Let's take a quick break here. Little update from Sue Thomas on the traffic out and about as we're all getting home from a manic Monday, indeed. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Jason Sneed, director of the Honest Elections Project on HR1. Our timing couldn't be better. As the aforementioned Joe Manchin has said, not so fast. I'm not sure I want to vote on that. So maybe don't bring it to the Senate floor. We'll get an update from Jason when we return here on the Mark Reardon Show. Tim Jones in the Big Chair today, 97.1 FM Talk.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Joe Manchin has become the new Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, during Obama's presidency, said he would do everything in his power to stop Obama. He's also repeated that now during the Biden presidency by saying he would do everything in his power to stop President Biden. And now Joe Manchin is doing everything in his power to stop democracy and to stop our work for the people, the work that the people sent us here to do.
Well, that's Congressman Jamal Bowman attacking fellow colleague, U.S. Senator Democrat Joe Manchin. Well, how strange times have become. Like I said earlier in the show, getting elected is fun. Governing is hard. I know about both of those, having been in the Missouri legislature. Let's talk to an expert on this issue. Joining us now is Jason Sneed, executive director of the Honest Elections Project. We're going to talk about HR1 and other things. Jason, great to have you on the show today. Your timing, all of our timing is perfect, given the news that came out just over the weekend about the fact that Joe Manchin may not be so excited about his party's plans to federalize and nationalize elections, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. I think all of us who follow this were surprised to see the op-ed on Sunday, which seemed to state matter-of-factly that Senator Manchin would neither vote for H.R. 1 nor vote to get rid of the filibuster to help the Democrats in Congress pass it.
I'll tell you, Jason, as someone who makes a living communicating like I do, and I've been in elected politics, I've been on the private sector side, I'm in the radio world now, I really appreciate a good communicator, a good wordsmith. And as much as I don't agree with them, boy, the Democrats, they sometimes have the best wordsmithing. I mean, there's Representative Bowman talking about how H.R. 1 is for the people act. Boy, Jason, how could you be against something that's for the people? But a lot of times, Jason, they call things certain things that are the exact opposite of what they do. I don't think this would do anything for the people. I think this would take power away from the people. What say you?
Well, look, we know from reading this 800-page bill that is called the For the People Act, that there are a number of provisions in it which actually run in the exact opposite direction, at least when you look at public opinion polling. Mm-hmm. For instance, more than 3 in 4 American voters back voter identification requirements. They want people to show photo IDs when they cast a ballot. Well, this piece of legislation would actually eliminate those requirements in all 50 states. We know that only 1 in 10 voters think it should be legal for political operatives to go around door to door collecting voters' ballots without government supervision. That's a practice known as ballot trafficking. But this law would actually make that practice legal and push it into all communities in all 50 states. There are a number of pieces of policy that are in this massive bill that would fundamentally reshape American elections and would do it in ways which are not backed by the majority of American voters who want it to be easy to vote, but also hard to cheat. And this piece of legislation goes after all the safeguards that make it hard to cheat in American elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason, I know that this H.R. 1 and the fact that it's H.R. 1 shows what a priority it is for Nancy Pelosi and some more of the radical liberals and leftists in the House. The fact that it's been called H.R. 1 for the last 2 congressional cycles, and they apparently got some more bad ideas, the Democrats did, from the pandemic. And a lot of us believe that they were utilizing or they were taking advantage of the pandemic to try out some of these new ways of voting, you know, voting days, if not weeks, if not months before Election Day, maybe even days or weeks after Election Day. Jason, I got some good friends here in the state of Missouri who are election clerks or directors of elections in certain counties. And they say, boy, you want to insert some more fraud and potential problems in the electoral system, then take Election Day as far away as you can from the day it's supposed to be on. And so the left is now apparently utilizing the pandemic to make some of these items that they said were for emergency purposes only now permanent. And many of them have proven to be problematic, weren't they, in the last election cycle?
Well, yes, there are actually 2 layers of problems here. The first layer is that a lot of the policies that they were pushing during the pandemic were filled with problems. For instance, mailing absentee ballots to every registered voter, including those who are inactive. Those people who are inactive are folks who haven't voted in a number of years. So you're sending ballots to voters who are very likely to have moved away from the state or possibly even deceased. We know this was a problem because it happened in Nevada, it happened in New Jersey, and in New Jersey, it actually contributed to a vote fraud scandal where a number of individuals who were subsequently indicted were attempting to rig a local election for their own favor, taking advantage, among other things, from the fact that everyone was receiving ballots. Ballots were being dumped in trash cans because the people they were supposed to be sent to were no longer at those registered addresses. Mm-hmm. So there's this problem, which is we know these policies are replete with problems. The other is that the policies were being pushed in ways which are extra legal through the judicial system rather than the legislative system. So what we had were progressive groups, including the Democratic Party itself, suing and filing over 200 lawsuits all before Election Day, all to accomplish policy changes rather than changes that were truly mandated by the Constitution. They actually argued effectively that the pandemic required that states adopt a progressive agenda when it comes to elections. And so that raises serious questions when you're using the courts to impose flawed policies. That raises serious questions about the wisdom of that approach. And now, of course, they're trying to codify this permanently mm-hmm. and everywhere and go much further.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Speaking of Jason Snead, executive director of the Honest Elections Project, about H.R. 1 and beyond. And so, Jason, then what's because of everything you just said, when state legislatures, mainly red state, Republican-led state legislatures, try to push back on this and try to instill some sort of electoral integrity or electoral reforms, well, Jason, they bear the brunt of being of the typical chastisement from the left that, oh, you're only doing this because you're racist, right? And you want to be discriminatory and you want to restrict and suppress voting rights. And they did it in Georgia. It caused the loss of the All-Star game, which is a bit ironic considering the fact the only people that are, well, the people that are mainly going to get hurt are the minorities who have businesses and live and work in downtown Atlanta. Now they're taking their battle to Texas. Texas is trying to do some electoral reform. But Jason, despite the pejoratives that are thrown around, these types of electoral reforms are not discriminatory or restrictive at all, are they?
No, in fact, we've got solid data now from a number of elections where we've set diversity and turnout records. And this is all in recent elections where a number of states have had voter identification laws and other quote-unquote suppressive policies, which are supposedly designed to discriminate against voters of color. That's the line that we keep hearing. But we know that these policies do not have any detrimental impact on these voters. In fact, if you look at recent polling, for instance, by overwhelming margins, Black and Hispanic voters in America want people to have voter ID laws. And it's very difficult to square this argument that a voter identification law is only designed to prevent people from voting when the people that it is ostensibly discriminating against are saying by 40-point margin in the case of Black voters or by a 60-point margin for Hispanic voters that they want those laws. So what we're seeing is an extreme disconnect between progressive elites and the media and the average American voter of all colors and all backgrounds who want it to be easy to vote but hard to cheat. And we know that basic safeguards are essential to ensuring that we can trust the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Jason Snead, executive director of the Honest Elections Project, he's got two great op-eds up that were just published, one in the Wall Street Journal, H.R. 1 would steamroll the Constitution, and the other in Real Clear Politics, don't mess with Texas election reform. Jason, given the numbers and the polling you just told me, it despite what we're hearing, the drumbeat that comes out of the nightly news and from the legacy media that we all get drowned with, it sounds like a great majority, if not close to a supermajority of Americans, would agree with these electoral reforms. So, Jason, would you encourage our listeners here in Missouri and anybody in Illinois or any other place that they're listening to us online, it's time to call your state legislator and say, what are you doing for electoral reform in the state of XYZ?
Well, look, I think that every voter has a right to expect that the electoral process will deliver results they can trust. And I think that means that we have to have policies which give adequate access to the voting booth, but which also ensure that everyone's ballot is properly counted and that people can ultimately have confidence in the results of the election. And I think that there is, personally speaking, as the head of the Honest Elections Project, there is no issue of greater importance than ensuring that we can trust the democratic system. So I would absolutely encourage everyone to get educated on these issues, to understand what's really going on, and above all, to know that when you hear cries of Jim Crow or anything else in this space, what you're really hearing are political battle cries that are designed to distract from the fact that basic safeguards like voter ID are overwhelmingly popular. And I think that voters deserve to know that. And I think they deserve an honest debate that is according to the numbers and the data and the truth of these policies, not based on political rhetoric that's really trying to change the rules for partisan purposes.
Mm-hmm. Jason, how firm, I looked at the op-ed from Joe Manchin. It seemed pretty clear. I don't know that I trust Joe Manchin any more than anybody else in his party, but he seemed to be pretty clear on that. Do you think they think this is the beginning of the end of H.R. 1, or do you think that that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer will look for some kind of other end run around or some kind of maybe diluted version of the original legislation to try to get Manchin on board? Or do you think he's got a bright line on this issue?
Well, at least as far as the upcoming vote in the Senate is concerned, I think that Manchin's op-ed confirms that that H.R. 1 is not going to pass the Senate. Now, I fully expect that Democrats in the Senate will still bring the bill to the floor for a vote in some way, shape, or form, and that they will still continue to try to put the pressure on Manchin to change his mind. But, of course, Manchin himself has already floated his support for a piece of legislation known as the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, or H.R. 4. Mm-hmm. And this has not been formally introduced. He is positioning this as the potentially more bipartisan, less extreme election reform bill. But the important thing to note here is that this is as much of a federal takeover of state elections as H.R. 1. In fact, it would put Washington in a position to be able to veto a number of state election safeguards, like new voter ID laws or like policies that clean up voter rolls in all 50 states. So in many ways, it's just as significant and just as much a federal takeover of elections. It's anything but a less extreme middle ground on election reform.
Fascinating. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Seems like the fox is definitely in the hen house on this issue, truly indeed. check out Jason's op-eds, Wall Street Journal, H.R. 1 would steamroll the Constitution, Real Clear Politics, Don't Mess with Texas Election Reform. Jason Snead, our guest this afternoon, the executive director of the Honest Elections Project. Jason, thanks for all the great information. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. Great to have you as well. Well, we're down to one last segment. Wow, that was a quick Monday. Very good. Very good indeed. We'll take a break here. Sue will give us a final traffic update during the show, and then we'll come back. And I did get an update for you. Sue, I think you asked me this like an hour and a half ago. It's hard for me to remember things on Monday. About, or maybe it was Andrew. The crowds and the traffic?
No, that was me.
Okay, on my parents' journey around the upper Midwest and the Great Plains and South Dakota and all that. I got an answer for you.
Oh, good.
I'll give it to you when
we come back.
Good,
good, good.
Very good. All that and more here as we wrap up the Mark Reardon Show. You happy to have you join the conversation? 314-241-9797, 314-241-9797. Back with lots more after this here at 97.1 FM Talk.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We all know the stories that are coming out of schools. I mean, I have a girl that I used to babysit for who's in high school, and the things that they're teaching them, you know, on a day of school, and I'm being serious here, on a day of school, they're meant to go around the classroom, and if you have white skin, you're supposed to tell them why you feel guilty about having white skin. This is in New York City, by the way. Why you feel guilty that your skin is white. I cannot comprehend that. That's incomprehensible to me, because when I was growing up, we never talked about color because we didn't see it. What they're trying to do is systematically program children to see color, because they want them to eventually become activists, and they want them to hate one another. Mm-hmm. They see an opportunity in division. If you can teach them to be divided young, then you can turn them into activists and angry people that become Antifa marchers when they're older.
Mm. Candace Owens there talking about CRT. She's coming to Missouri, actually, in August.
Oh, is she?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
There's an event that I forgot to ask. I have to have Bill on. Bill Eigel and former Representative Paul Kirtman bringing her in. So they're doing a dinner. And
wow,
it's going to
be
out in August. Yeah, it's, tickets are only like $60 with dinner, which I think that's,
jeez.
I think they put those too low. So I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Dinner these days anywhere, you know?
It's true.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Wrapping up here today on a beautifully sunny, boy, it's very sunny out, isn't it? We get that western sun here in the afternoon, don't we? Mm-hmm.
That's why it was so weird that we had rain showers move through west of 270 this afternoon. I don't want to forget those people, because it looks perfectly normal down here. Mm-hmm. We're like, woo!
Summertime, we get those pop-ups, right?
Yeah.
Those little cells. And I know this morning, was it the morning? Yeah.
Yeah,
out in Eureka, there was some rain, and then it, like, the sun would come out,
poof.
Then it would rain again, then the sun would come out. So that's what we get in the summertime, little pop-ups. So,
your parents' trip.
Yes, yes. So my dad, who's listening this afternoon, say hello to Dr. Bill Jones. My dad reports that restaurants were a little crowded sometimes.
Now, is this just on the trip in general or Mount Rushmore itself?
He's saying in general.
Okay.
But rest of time, no problems at all with crowds. Roads were all wonderful.
Great. That's
so
great to hear.
In general, I guess this was a good time of the year. Maybe it was still a little,
before school let out.
They were up and back right before the schools all
genius.
Let out.
It's genius.
Yes, yes.
Nice job.
I got to finally go to Alaska about 4 years ago, maybe.
I would love it.
And we were up there. I didn't get to do a whole lot. I want to go, it whet my appetite. I went up for a conference and we had about 4 days there. Not enough time, but we were only in Anchorage.
Okay.
So we mainly were in Anchorage, and I was up there at the end of May. So it was still about, you know, it was ready to become the land of the midnight sun. It was light until about 11:30 at night.
That's crazy.
And it never really got dark.
Wow.
And if you woke up, at 3 o'clock in the morning, the sun was rising, you know? So that was crazy. And you got the feeling you were in a strange land. Like this was the end of civilization. It really felt that way.
I could see
and
that.
And we took a couple road trips out of town. One time we got to go and do we did an ATV deal in the afternoon in a glacier valley. We went on a tour on
really
ATVs.
Cool.
And we went way up into this glacier valley. You don't get very close to the glacier because it's kind of dangerous. But we got close enough we could see it. It was receding at that point in the year, and then it comes back down the valley. And what looked like dust by the time we got back, we're just coated in this stuff. It was not normal dust. It's all rock dust.
Wow.
It's rock ash, wow, you know, from the glacier scraping up and back over millennium.
That is really cool.
And a lot of little round houses, Sue, like a little of those geodomes, you know?
Interesting.
And I would ask our guides, I'm like, do people live there and how do they get stuff? I'm like, well, yes, they live there. They live there by choice because they want to be here. You know,
really cool.
Pretty much off the grid, you know?
Is salmon a certain season up there, or did you just gorge yourself on seafood, or at least salmon
yes,
and such?
Yes, lots of great fish. Oh. Everything's very fresh.
Oh, I would love it.
Anchorage is it's a city, but it's a little tiny city. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's kind of like they've got tall buildings and things, but it's like a little mini St. Louis. You know, it's a little tiny city. You know, it's like right on The sound there, Prince William, I think, sound is unbelievable. You can see Mount McKinley, which I think they now call Kilimanjaro, in the background. There's two names for McKinley these days.
I don't know. Hold on.
What is it? It's not St. Helen, is it?
No.
What is the other name for Mount McKinley? Oh,
Denali.
Denali. Yes, that's the native name. Mm-hmm. It's in the distance, and it just looks spectacular. I mean, the scenery, you literally could just sit there all day and just turn in circles and look at the scenery around you. It's unbelievable.
That's really cool.
And the other funny thing we learned was that, you know, like we have cars here. People up there have amphibious prop planes. Like, it's like a thing. Like there's so many of them, it's actually very affordable. And it's one of the only ways to get around a big chunk of Alaska in the summertime because everything is melted. And there's lakes and rivers and water. And some places are inaccessible unless you get a little prop plane. So there's like little prop planes parked everywhere around the airport in the canals and stuff.
I wonder how much one of those is. I mean, that just seems odd to me.
$20,000-$30,000.
Oh, well, then
it's like
is
buying
like
an
a car.
It's like buying a fancy car.
Wow, that's
maybe
incredible.
Not even a fancy car these days. I don't know.
That's incredible.
So we saw lots of wildlife. The scenery is incredible. So one night we were up at the we went up to the top of the hotel we were staying in, which was called it was a cool old hotel where a lot of travelers come through and a lot of the seniors get on the big tours and stuff. It's a very busy place. And we went up one night to watch the setting sun at 11:45 at night. You get really thrown off with your sleep patterns, you know.
Well, sure.
And there was these two delightful ladies who were there, and we went up to the hotel bar and we were hanging out and struck up a conversation with them. They were at the end. They were at the end of doing the Alaskan tour, like the full 3 weeks. They're like best friends from forever, and they're like, "Yep, our husband said for our I don't know what they were celebrating. They were celebrating something. They're like, go to Alaska, you know,
we'll
go play golf somewhere." And so they did the whole land, air, and sea, right?
That's...
So they went on like the cruise up to like the northern parts. They did the bus ride all over the place. They did the whole tamale. They did a whole 3 weeks of Alaska. And they were back in Anchorage, and you could tell they were like, "Yeah, we probably look a little rough right now. We've been out in the outback, basically.
That's amazing.
Living off the land." And they did some backpacking, and they were like, "It's weird being back in a big city." And we're going Anchorage, 100,000 people, you know. And so that's how remote you really get into the remoteness of Alaska when you're up there. Just spectacular.
That's
highly
awesome.
Recommend it, Sue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, 3 weeks, that'd really be hardcore, wouldn't it?
Yep, yeah. So South Dakota, Jackson Hole, Alaska, we just went around the upper parts of the world there. So
awesome.
Gang, thanks for having me today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Tuesday, Mark will be back in the big chair, and I'll be back from time to time. I think I'm filling in for Annie Fry next week because she's heading out to have another baby.
Yeah,
so,
she is.
Oh, it's time,
it
isn't
is.
It?
It is time. Aww. So I think I'm filling in next week. I think Mike Ferguson and I are taking some turns doing that. So you'll have to tune in for that. Let's see. We've got the DGS recap up, as it is every evening from 6 to 7 p.m. And then Mark Cox, fresh and out of the gates at 5 a.m. Keep it right here for everything you need to know at 97.1 FM Talk. Have a great Monday evening, y'all.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.